Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Lucky Few podcast, where we are shifting the narrative by shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome. This is Heather,
Mercedes,
and Micah.
And today we are joined by Olivier and Hilda Bernier, the directors of Forget Me Not, a documentary expose about segregation in the school system. We're so excited to hear from them. Thank you for joining us, friends, and welcome to the Lucky Few podcast.
Does your child struggle with constipation? Increasing fiber in their diet can help. High Fiber for Kids provides 6 grams of soluble fiber in only 1 tablespoon of clear liquid. It also contains prebiotics, which balances and promotes gut health while improving regularity. High Fiber for Kids is safe and works best when taken regularly. It's available on Amazon. Look for the bottle with the duck. High Fiber for Kids. Small dose, big impact.
All right, ladies. So there is this film festival happening. I think the day this airs is the last day or the second to last day of a film festival, which is called the Human Rights Watch Film Festival. And it was actually brought to my attention, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago, but Oliver and Hilda can fill in some of these blanks when they come on. But their film, Forget Me Not, is about their son who has Down syndrome, was inspired by their son who has Down syndrome, going to school and in New York, and just the segregation that they see happening with the disability community in the schools. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So before we have them on, I'm wondering if anyone here has experience with that.
Yeah. Right.
No, this is the first time we've talked about it here.
This is wild.
This is wild. I have to say, I haven't seen the film. None of us have seen this film, and I'm very excited when I have the opportunity to. And I just keep feeling so bewildered that our kids going to school and being segregated into separate classrooms is still a thing. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Right.
It's very interesting.
It is very interesting. I feel like, too, I homeschool Sunflower, so I feel like I can't speak into it too much, but I have, even being in the homeschool world, hit some barriers, because you can have, each child, the one that we're a part of, gets charter funds that we can use for enrichment resources. So like swim class, a pottery class, a farm class, and Sunflower, has this money to use to do these things, but they are different vendors. So we're still meeting the same people that feel like this is a general situation and I'm not equipped to take on a person with special needs. Right. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
It's still a different setting. Same issues,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like there's still so much growth. So it's a lot of convincing on my part and like a lot of handholding, or maybe Sunflower just can't do it, you know, which is, seems like then that's a lost opportunity to her. And there's not just a special farm school in our area that's only catering to people with special needs. You know, that's just not how a community setting is supposed to run. So we're kind of trying to pave some new ways there, but again, it's not for everyone, right? And you would go to this school and, or these different things, pottery class or farm school, and they would consider themselves a place for everyone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Most people do. This is a place for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then I show up with my daughter. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we weren't thinking about the people.
That kind of everyone.
Yeah, that kind of everyone. I really, I feel like that.
Yep. Yeah, we went because we were trying to figure out what we're going to do with Mason, my oldest daughter, for school next year. And I went to this like informational for homeschool co-op something something. I'm going to spare the details. But at one point I asked about that, you know, and they said like supports for people with disabilities. And they're like, oh, we can't offer like IEP support. We can't fulfill IEP support. And I get that. There's not funding. I get all that. But then they said, it was kind of like a no, no, no. People like that aren't welcome here. And then she said, people with disabilities are welcome. We just don't have any additional supports for them. And I'm like, well, then they're not welcome. You know,
right,
like,
right.
And also we're not asking anyone to reinvent the wheel here, right? It's like, be a little bit creative and see the dignity and value in a person with a disability, and that they, that your people without disabilities need them, and then let's make it work.
Right.
Oh gosh.
I will say our public school charter, we are doing our IEP. And I thought it would be easier to get like a one-on-one for Sunflower so she can access these enrichment options, but it's kind of hard. And I'm like, it's hard to get a one-on-one in public school. It's not supposed to be hard to get a one-on-one for public homeschool, but it is. It's the same thing.
Same thing.
Well, we're going to get to hear about this documentary and what inspired it. And hopefully everyone will have a chance to watch it. Before we jump into that conversation, I would love to read our review for the week. This one comes from Sarah Kendrick. Sarah says, I can't even begin to describe what this podcast means to me. I've probably listened now for about 2 years, and I'm telling you that this group of mamas and everyone they bring along to educate and advocate for our children with Down syndrome has given me so much comfort and friendship that they will never begin to understand. Sarah, this is too kind. Oh, the depths, y'all. I'm telling you, I'm alone so much with my two children, and one of them has Down syndrome. And when I listen to these ladies, I've never felt less alone. It's the truth. It's such a gift beyond words. It's so easy to feel so isolated when you don't have a Facebook. Also, LOL, but good job, girlfriend, not having a Facebook. But on top of that, having a child with special needs can always feel like no one gets it. I love you guys so much, and I'm so, so grateful for the resources and encouragement and growth you have given me and my family. So much love. Well, Sarah Kendrick, thanks for that, girl.
Yeah, Sarah, we're just so grateful that it means that much to you.
Yes.
Seriously.
Yeah. So friends, your reviews mean so much to us. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, and then maybe we'll read it next week out loud here on our podcast. Okay, without further ado,
let's do it.
All right, so I am so excited to introduce you to Olivier and Hilda Bernier, the directors of Forget Me Not. It is a documentary expose of the New York City Department of Education's policy of segregating disabled children in the historic District 75. Forget Me Not is the incredible story about the rights of disabled students in New York's public schools, told through the personal journey of a family. It follows them step by step as they battle with the New York City Department of Education and its policy of segregating students with disabilities. We witness their meetings, their education on due process, and their quest for inclusion for their son, Emilio. I am so excited to chat about this. It's just right up our alley here on the Lucky View podcast. So friends, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. Okay. First, before we get into the nitty gritty of this, tell our listeners and me where you're located and just a little bit about your family.
Sure. Do you want to go with that?
Yeah, so we are in the Tri-State area. We are located in, when the movie was filmed, we were Brooklyn residents, and we loved it very much. Recently, because of the pandemic, we moved out of Brooklyn. Our family, it's growing. So we were in need of a little bit more space. Emilio, it's 5 years old. As of now, it's just the three of us. Olivier, myself and our beautiful boy, Emilio, which just turned 5 a couple of weeks ago.
And soon to be a big brother.
Yeah, he's very excited. He talks to my belly every morning.
And oh,
it's the cutest thing in the world.
That's so great. Go ahead, Olivia. Did you want to say something?
I was just going to say right now we're talking to you from Brooklyn, New York, where I still work and where our studio is.
Okay. I want to talk about the film itself, but I guess before we even go into that, tell a little bit more about the film festival that it's a part of and how that came about.
Sure. The film is part of the Human Rights Watch Film Festival, and this year it's a virtual festival in light of the pandemic. And we're super excited to be the opening night film of the festival. So as we're recording this on May 19th, it'll be available. By the time listeners get to hear the podcast, it might no longer be available at the festival, but we're excited that the film will be released internationally in later September. So the Human Rights Watch Film Festival has been an amazing opportunity for the film just because we're so aligned in the aspect of human rights and the rights of people with disabilities. So they've been giving the film a megaphone, so to speak.
Cool. And have you worked in film before? Is this what you do?
Yeah, this is, this film has been an adventure because I got to merge my two loves in life, which is my filmmaking and my family, not necessarily in that order.
So when did you start this film, and then what inspired it?
Yeah, so a lot of people ask that question because, you know, they think I started the film before Emilio was even ever born. And really, it is my favorite subject to film. So I'm always filming it, always filming Emilio since he's come about, you know, just because, again, like I love having a camera in my hands. But the actual film came about around the time when we had to start transitioning from early intervention to the school district. And at that point, we had the amazing opportunity to make a film about inclusive education. So I thought, what a perfect opportunity for me as a parent to learn about inclusive education while making a film about it.
You have a line that you say, I haven't seen the film yet, but in like doing some background stuff, you say, Olivia, you say, "This is not only a story I'm telling, but a story I'm living." And I'm assuming that goes along with what inspired you to make the film. But what can you expand on that?
Sure. So, you know, it started that I wanted to make a film just exploring what inclusive education was and showing people what successful inclusion looks like, because I believe that it's something that you can talk about till you're blue in the face, but till you actually see it working well, you just can't really wrap your head around it if you grew up going to a school that practices segregation. Mm. So I wanted to make a film that kind of inspired a future generation of policymakers, teachers, administrators to take the film and use it as a tool to you know, to motivate themselves and their policies. But along the way, we also decided that, hey, it would be a really good way into the film with a personal story about our own son, Emilio, and kind of, you know, chaptering the film with Emilio, you know, getting accepted into school, being born, getting accepted into school, and then his first day of school. And that was going to kind of be the chapter marks of the film. But what ended up happening while I was making this film about inclusion is that Emilio was being tracked towards segregation. And for us, you know, suddenly the movie started shifting and I started recording more of Hilda and Emilio's story.
Hilda, when you thought about school for Emilio, like when, so he's born and he goes to early start, and it's different in state by state. I'm in California and I have heard a little bit about what New York City schools are like, and it's very different, it seems like, than my little town of Southern California. But did you always envision him in a certain place in school, or was it something you kind of started to think about as he got closer to those milestones?
So I would say I was I was very nervous about that transition that happens between the age of 2 and 3, just because I know how large the school system in New York is, and you know, there's, you know, all these settings and all these people that come to evaluate your child. And, you know, on my experience as a special education teacher as well, you know, I have had the opportunity to see the dynamics that, that take place in school buildings. So I try to come into this transition with an open mind. I was not particularly set for one thing. When we first started looking for evaluation agencies and when we started looking at schools. But I did know that I didn't wanted him to be segregated in what we know as a special class. Just because I have had my own part on teaching different settings. So in my professional experience as a teacher, I taught integrated classrooms, I taught sets, I taught, I have a handful of special classes, and it was evident to me that the special class model was not appropriate for him, mm-hmm. for many other kids that are going through the school system. So there was I had a very intense internal battle because, you know, I had to separate Hilda the mom from Hilda the teacher, It was hard because the teacher in me wanted to like give credit to all these evaluations and the input that these other people at the table sitting at the table are giving you, but at the same time, deep inside of me, my heart was breaking as I could see how words in paper can track him into something that he might never be able to get out of.
So,
I think that's how I slowly started making my mind up. And, you know, I had the opportunity to speak to other families that that were going through the same thing. You know, it's one of those things that you just have to decide, like, what are you going to advocate for? Yeah. And in our case, it's definitely inclusion.
Yeah. Do you guys have inclusive programs in place? Do you have access to inclusive programs, or are you kind of having to make that happen?
So in New York, there are inclusive programs. The problem that we had, and you know, that's maybe not fully explained in the film just because it's kind of granular, is that we couldn't visit those programs until we had an integrated IEP. Here they call inclusion integrated.
Okay.
So, you know, as we were trying to look for schools for Emilio, or settings, you know, they would call a school and they would say, well, we can't show you the school until you have the integrated IEP.
Okay.
So it was kind of like a catch-22.
And then how do you get an integrated IEP? That's not something that we have in California.
Sure. Well, you know, it's for Emilio, it worked this way. They gave him a battery of tests. You know, that lasts about 10 minutes. Someone comes in really briskly, I should say, and asks him a bunch of questions, kind of overwhelms him. And then they write a report based on that. And based on that report, which really should only be in place to say that he needs services, Based on that, they chose his class setting, which was a 12-1-2 segregated class, 12 students. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. So Hilda, I used to be a special education teacher as well. And it changes, the whole ball game changes when it's your kid. And like wearing those two hats and having such a deep understanding and even like a gratitude for the different systems in play, you know, like the understanding that at its that the hope of all these tests is that it's good for our kid, like, right? Like we're trying to get our kids supports and all those things, but then how the language and what comes out in the testing, and it's still so seeped in like these ableistic ideas that you don't see. I didn't see it when I was the teacher. I was so pro all of my students and I just couldn't see it as the teacher. And then having a kid, you're like, wait, it's like the mama bear. You're like, whoa, 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 whoa. My kid is incredible. And we are not going to stick this child in a separate space, you know?
And, you know, it's when you see these assessments and these evaluations, you want to, you know, you want to understand what's been said about your child. And you know, you want them to paint a clear picture of who your child is. But sometimes, because these assessments are made on a deficit model, the deficit perspective, what is the child lacking? The strengths are not being taken into account.
Right.
And it was for me very hard to understand how he wouldn't be afforded the opportunity to start in an inclusive setting at age 3. Mm-hmm. He's 3.
3. They're just 3. They're just 3, right?
Yeah, he's 3 years old. Like, you know, he should be playing around and working on his social skills and, you know, like just kind of like absorbing everything in his environment. And, you know, for me, it was hard to understand how we would put him into a classroom with students that were probably having the same difficulties, because where is the peer modeling in that case?
Right.
We know our children thrive on you know, mimicking and seeing good examples of everything, good or bad.
To that point too, what we explore in with the film is we go to some of the old institutions that existed around New York, because we felt that a lot of the New York City school system and the way it's constructed for people with disabilities is very reminiscent of the institutional system, basically because New York State shut down the institutions and the schools had to suddenly absorb all the students. And that's how we came up with District 75. But when I started visiting the institutions, I actually saw the same exact exams on strewn upon the floor that Emilio was given.
Wow.
So it was very shocking.
Wow. What were some of the most surprising aspects in this battle within the education system?
Well, you know, I think the most surprising aspect is that it was a battle. I think I was naive. I think that I was a little more prepared, having written IEPs and understanding the process. But I quite frankly thought that we were experts on our own child, and that our voices and this professional opinion as an educator as well would be given some weight, and it really wasn't at all. And that was shocking to me that you know, evaluators that saw our son for a few minutes had more influence on his trajectory for the rest of his life than we did.
Yeah, that was a similar experience for us and has continued to be, you know, like that our oldest is 13 and we just started junior high or middle school last year. It's like, we're still doing this, guys. You know, like we're still, this is still a battle. What in the world? And to have that IEP with the, as a legally binding document, I'm so grateful for what we have on our IEP, but also having to remind all the powers that be, like, this is a legally binding document. You have to do these things. And why do we have to keep convincing people that inclusion is best for all, right? On that note with inclusion and you guys doing this deep dive here, why do you think inclusion is so important?
From my perspective, just being a father, the first thing that I realized when my son was born is that I was incredibly unprepared for him. You know, we found out in the delivery room that he had Down syndrome, and it was scary because I didn't have the tools to understand what Down syndrome was at that time. And, you know, when I looked back on that moment, what I realized is that I had never even met anyone with Down syndrome in my life. And I had never even spent time with someone with an intellectual disability. And part of the reason was that in my school, I went to a very large school, but they were hidden from us. We never interacted with them. And I thought, you know, what a travesty. Why, you know, how different this moment could have been had I known what Down syndrome actually is. Mm. Which Down syndrome is not a life sentence. It's not all doom and gloom. And, you know, like I thought it was. So I kind of realized at that moment that through my own experience that I would have really loved to have an integrated setting for myself as a typically developing child.
Hilda, how about you? What would you say why inclusion is so important?
You know, I feel that inclusion is not only important for our kids. It's important for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have to navigate the same spaces. We all take the subway and read the same maps and, you know, take the same public transportation and go to the same places to shop. And, you know, we need to, you know, to live in a place where everybody can navigate and not only disabled people with disabilities, but also people that don't seem to have particular needs to understand how to coexist with each other.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, our populations have been pushed aside and they have been sent to places. And they go there and they spend their whole days there.
But I think, you know, it's disenfranchised.
Right, right. You know, like many of us, like you said, have not dealt with like people with disabilities. We don't know how to cater to them. And we all should be able to cater to everybody. There's so much benefit that comes from being able to share spaces with each other. We can all be better people if we are able to understand each other. And that's for me why inclusion is so important. It's, we all need to learn how to live as a community, and we can't do that if we are not providing the tools to everybody to be able to navigate the world.
Yeah. I think the classroom should really mirror the society we want to live in. So do we want to live in a society that's everyone's separate from each other? Do we want to live in a society that everybody works together to create a better world?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I've always said, with us and our experience, when I'm talking to our IEP team or to different parents, that the schools are like the hub of a community. Even if not everyone sends their kids to public school, but like that's like those little core spaces in community, and that's where it starts. That's where our kids first learn how to be part of a community. And that's why it's imperative that inclusion is their first example, and from preschool into kindergarten, you know, like that we have to start there, because the schools are so important for community building.
I think that's exactly right. You know, there's this old mindset that's still out there, that school is all about math, science, reading, writing. But really, you're learning so much more in school. You're learning things about empathy. You're learning discourse. You're learning how to agree and disagree. And, you know, the more diverse a class can be, the better it is.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so what are your biggest dreams and goals for this film?
Well, you know, I made the film, I tried to make the film in a way that's engaging to people that are not within the disabilities community. So I think one of the big goals was that I feel like for inclusion to really work, parents of typically developing children have to want it as well.
Yes.
There's a myth out there that inclusion will negatively impact a typically developing child, you know, dumb down the class, so to speak, but that's absolutely not true. So I wanted to make this film in a way that would help our core audience, which is parents going through the same thing, but also reach an audience that maybe never knew about this issue. And in fact, you know, as we pre-screened the film, one of the biggest reactions that I get from people that don't have children or typically developing children, they say, I had no idea. I had no idea this was happening. And so we tried to make the film in an engaging way. We didn't, you know, with education, it can get bogged down in terminology and acronyms. And so we tried to simplify it a little bit and make the IEP process more about the settings. Mm. You know, and then we wanted to show an inspirational viewpoint of what inclusion looks like when it's working really well. So we went to the Henderson School in Boston, that, in my opinion, is a model for inclusion. And it's a public school in Boston where about 40% of the children have disabilities and about 20% have significant disabilities, where in other schools, they would most likely be segregated. And in this school, everyone's included. Everyone learns with each other and from each other. And I think once you see the Henderson School, you can't unsee it. I think it's so ideal that I can't imagine any parent not wanting to send their child there, whether they have a disability or not.
I love that. We're going to air this on the 25th of May. And so the film festival is just wrapping up. I know after listening to this, our listeners are going to want to see this film. So how do we watch this film? How do we see it?
The festival runs until May 27th.
Okay.
So if they get lucky.
Yeah, they're still
tickets. Okay.
They're still sticking. We still have tickets. Well, I mean, the festival has tickets. They could probably watch it.
Okay. Yeah.
And then further beyond that, you know, I would tell everyone to just visit our website and leave their email with us. You know, we won't spam you or anything like that. We just want to send updates about the release of the film. But right now we're looking to release the film internationally in late September, October this year.
Okay. And what is that website?
It's forgetmenotdocumentary.com. And if that's too long, you can just do FMN. doc.com.
Okay. The website's beautiful, and you have the different images that you have on there are just breathtaking. So I think in the future too, like just letting us know how we can support the film and we can get that out to our listeners. I don't know if we want to do like watch parties or mandatory educator, like get your whole school together.
That's one thing we're actually really excited about, is that our grantor, Video Camp, is going to be providing free educational screenings across the world with the film. Because, you know, although the film is very focused on our son Emilio, it's a story that millions of kids are going through around the world. So they're going to be providing free educational screenings to organizations that want to do public screenings. So, you know, stay tuned for that as well.
That's very cool. And also on the website, listeners, are so many amazing resources. Tell us a little bit about some of those resources.
Yeah, well, you know, as I was saying earlier, you know, the film's only 99 minutes, so you can only fit so much in a movie. But we wanted to give audiences a way that after they see the film that they can either make a difference or they can just learn more about inclusion and learn more about their options. So there's, you know, one of our some examples of things on the website is the Lana Report on Inclusion, which was the basis of our film. It was a report written by Tom Hare, and it includes a lot of really good information about inclusion.
Yeah. Yes. And we listeners will have links in our show notes. So if all of this, if you forgot all of this, go to luckyfewpodcast.com and find this episode. We'll have links to everything. Are you guys on social media? Can people be following along? What's your social media handles?
Yes. Our social media handles are, do you want to read them?
Yeah, for Instagram, forget me not documentary, just okay. Like that. And Facebook, you can use the handle forget me not documentary. And on Twitter, you can find us as FMN doc.
Perfect.
Just like that.
Yeah. Is there anything we missed? Anything that you really wanted to say that I didn't get to?
No, I think that's most of it. I mean, okay. You know, I think if people see the film, they're gonna have, you know, they're gonna be enlightened, I think, especially if someone that's never thought about inclusion before. So I think seeing the film is the main thing. So hopefully we can get it out to everyone and look forward to updating your listeners on the release of it.
Yeah. Have you got some good feedback today since it started?
Not yet.
I haven't looked. I think it's a little bit early over here.
Okay.
The movie was released at midnight.
Midnight last night.
And then, you know, it's 1 o'clock. So we had a busy morning with the little guy taking him to school and all that. And, you know, life.
We're both a little nervous, to be honest, because it shares so much of our personal life.
So vulnerable. Yeah.
But, you know, right after this, I'm going to dive into it and see what's up.
Perfect. Okay. And one last question before we head over to some good news. What is a piece of advice you have for listeners who are facing their own battles with their child's education?
I would say that you need to advocate for what you think is best for your child. And if you don't know how to do that, there's, you know, many, you need to ask for help. There's parent groups, there's nonprofits and advocacy groups that can help you find avenues to navigate these processes. So I think like looking for help is very important, and you know, it will make give you a clearer idea of like where you are and where do you want to go.
Okay, that's good. Do you want to add anything, Olivier?
No, I thought that was great.
Okay, that's great. Well, I am so grateful for your work and for the time and energy and love that you put into this film. It's no small task. And we here at the podcast are cheering you guys on. And I know our listeners are going to be really excited to watch this and to share it with everyone that they know and love. So thank you. Thanks for being on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate it. Okay. So we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we're going to go into some good news. So when we get back from this little break, if you guys have some good news to share about Emilio, we'd love it.
Did you know that healthy fiber intake is important to help keep your little one's potty time regular? Fiber is found in lots of food like apples, broccoli, beans, and whole grains, but it can be difficult to reach daily fiber goals with such a busy schedule, fussy eaters, or food sensitivities. High Fiber for Kids has 6 grams of fiber in only 1 liquid tablespoon. It also contains prebiotics, which balance the gut and keep bowel movements regular. The best part is that it doesn't require mixing into large amounts of water like other powder fiber supplements, and it has more fiber than most fiber gummies. High fiber for kids is not a laxative and will not cause dependency. It is safe to take daily and works best when taken regularly. It is PEG free and is also dairy, gluten, and nut free. See why parents are excited about this product? It's available on Amazon. Look for the bottle with the duck. High fiber for kids, small dose with big impact.
Time for good news, time for good news. Everybody, welcome to the good news. Yeah, yeah.
All right, guys, welcome back. Okay, Hilda, Olivier, do you have any good news to share about your son, Emilio?
Well, Hilda has something. And then I probably have something different.
Perfect. So, okay. Yes.
Two pieces of good news.
We'll take it.
Yes. So Emilio was, you know, we were all on lockdown for a very long time. And during that time, you know, he's the social aspect of his life was pretty damaged. Recently he had the opportunity to go back into the classroom. And every day, there is like this, you know, I get the feedback from his teacher and the eighth are in the classroom. They tell me every day, oh, Emilio wanted to play with this kid this morning. And Emilio greeted this other kid very enthusiastically. And, you know, it shows that how, you know, necessary social interaction is and relationships. He was craving to be around other children. And at the beginning, he was not interacting, and now he's just like a social butterfly. So that makes me happy. Yeah.
That is some good news. I love it.
And my good news is that Emilio recently learned how to use a drill, which is awesome. We put his swings together.
That is like terrifying good news. Just
kidding. My heart stopped.
I love that. That's some good fine motor skills though, right?
Yeah, I was pretty impressed. He just picked it up and he started using it. And I was like, I give him a little hand, but I think soon he's going to be working on projects with me. So.
I love that. That's sweet. I love that. Thank you guys for sharing that. We have good news from a listener too. This is from Rachel Victoria Palmer is her handle on Instagram. She says, so much progress and good news. But my favorite this week is our little Miss Independent started to sign help after months of refusing to do it. That is really good news. I remember the first time Mason signed help, actually, in other different words. So that's awesome. Thank you so much, Rachel Victoria Palmer, for sharing your good news. We, as always, love to hear from you guys. And if you have good news to share, you can leave a voicemail or a direct message on Instagram and share about your family and your good news about your loved one with Down syndrome, or if you are a person with Down syndrome and you have some good news to share, we'd love to hear from you. If you have a product or a business and you'd like to help us shout the worth of people with Down syndrome, then we'd love to partner with you, and you can email hello@theluckyfewpodcast.com for all sponsorship opportunities. Thank you again for being on the show, Olivier and Hilda. We really appreciate taking your time to talk to us about this film, for putting this film into the world. I cannot wait to watch it. And a huge thank you to our editor, Josh Avis, our producer, Val Schleter, our sponsor, and to all of you who have shared the Lucky Few podcast with your friends, who listen faithfully and who cheer us on. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember that you are, dear listener, supporting your loved one with Down syndrome. And if you are a person with Down syndrome, you are a shouter of worth and you are a narrative shifter. So keep on keeping on. We are here cheering for you, and we will be together on our next episode. Again, such an honor to get to talk to you guys. Thanks for taking the time, and let's be in touch.
All right. Awesome. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.